Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:23 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 3rd. I thought we'd kick off with the platinum-palladium ratio because it peaked back in 2009. And since then, it has done pretty much nothing but decline. And there have only been two occasions when it spent a brief period above the 200-day moving average in all that time. And both failed, and on each of those occasions, then the ratio went on to make new lows. But we're at particularly depressed levels right now. In fact, the ratio is significantly below where it was all the way back in the early 2000s. So we can then think about the much longer term, and that historically there has been some cyclicality. Back in the 80s and in the 90s, there was the argument for substitution and retooling of palladium in favor of platinum for catalytic converters. Now, there is less enthusiasm for it today, that's the argument, because of the evolution of electric vehicles, that with the vast majority of companies that are looking at producing electric vehicles, then they're not willing to spend the time and energy necessary to retool, to take advantage of low platinum prices, because they're investing much more heavily in the evolution of electric vehicles. So that's been one of the primary reasons why platinum has fallen so far against palladium. But at the same time, there is the argument that the evolution of this green energy phenomenon and the willingness of governments around the world to fund new green initiatives, that is propelling the argument for hydrogen. If we think about the argument about precious metals and industrial metals, well, platinum is the most luxurious of precious metals for jewelry, and it's considered a waste to use gold in diamond jewelry, for example, of anything over a couple of carats. Then when we think about silver, well, silver is a monetary metal as well, but it's also an industrial resource, and one of the primary uses for it today is in solar cells. But it's also a very good conductor, and so is gold for that matter. And of course, silver also has antimicrobial characteristics, which of course so does copper. But then we also have the argument with platinum was that the same that happened with silver, with the dawn of digital photography, nobody needed film anymore, so that resulted in a loss of demand for silver, and then we had a new bull market as demand from an investment started to pick up. Well, platinum is now in the process of breaking out of its base formation. It's been ranging below 1,000 for about 5 years. Every time it has pushed above 1,000, it has failed. And therefore, it's going to have to hold this breakout in order to confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the very short term. But when we start to think about, well, what is doing well right now? Well, green energy, wind, solar, even rhodium, and anything to do with renewable energy has been doing really very well. And hydrogen is really only just getting off the blocks. When we think about the size of companies that are really in the hydrogen sector, so for example, Ceres Power is one, and it continues to accelerate higher. But even after a very substantial gain this year already, it's still only got a market cap of $1.5 billion. And that is after a move higher of 4 times already. Then when we think about one of the larger US companies, then their market cap after a big move is about $10 billion. But when we consider that the market has never had more companies with market caps in excess of 100 billion, then we have to think that these moves are very large. There is absolutely no question of that. But the hydrogen sector is very small. Right now, the bulk of hydrogen comes from natural gas. Natural gas prices have been pulling back because of warm weather. And also, as we head into December, the vast majority of stockpiling for the winter has already taken place. So it's quite normal to see natural gas prices pulling back in the last month or two of the year. That's exactly what we had in 2019, 2018, 2017. So there is a clear cyclicality to natural gas prices. In order to clearly demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, then we would need to see support coming through somewhere in the region of the trend mean. But the reality is that natural gas is cheap overall. It's still within a very long-term base formation. We have choppy action between about $1.50 and $4. And this very choppy action is likely to persist for as long as it takes to build out a hydrogen sector. But then a lot of the hydrogen that is being planned is green hydrogen. But in order to burn that green hydrogen, you're going to need fuel cells. And fuel cells do need platinum as their the catalyst. So that's a bull market argument for why there should be an industrial use for platinum. But industrial resources generally are doing better. So copper prices have been rallying in a pretty impressive manner now for the last 6 or 7 months, and they are around the $3.50 area. This is right in the region of the peaks from back in 2016. So we may see some, or 17 I should say, we may see some consolidation, and there is a short-term overbought condition, but this continues to look like a bull market environment overall. The reality is that every government around the world is looking towards reflation, and that is putting upward pressure on government bond yields, is putting downward pressure on the US dollar. What I find interesting is that if we look at the dollar index, it's got about 57% euro. So in many respects, it's just the inverse of the euro. I do think that the Bloomberg dollar index is a better measure. It's got more weightings in other currencies. So it's not as heavily influenced by the euro, but it also has the Chinese renminbi and the Indian rupee as well. And we can see there then that the euro weighting is only about 32%, and the number of additional currencies that it has is, I think, more reflective of exactly what the dollar looks like. And of course, the chart pattern is not all that different from the dollar index, but the moves this year have certainly been more exaggerated on the Bloomberg spot dollar index. And this looks like a type 3 top formation. We have the ranging, we have the time, and the size. And we have a succession of failed breaks, both up and downwards. So as it comes back down towards the lower side of this range, well, investors will be looking for the potential for a snapback, or at least some consolidation in the region of the lows from 2018. But the reality is that there is no country anywhere that is printing as much money as the USA is. And even if one were to adjust the amount of money that's being printed relative to the size of the economy, well, Canada is potentially printing more money. But when it comes to the big currency pairs like the euro or the yen or the pound or the Swiss franc, then nobody is printing as much money as the USA is, and that is putting downward pressure on the dollar. And of course, that's an additional tailwind for commodities. So gold prices continue to rebound, and they have now rallied for 3 consecutive days, and we're coming up to the first area of potential resistance. There was clear evidence of support around the $1,860 area, and we're now at $1,840. So the potential is that we get up towards those levels and pause a little. But as long as the low from the beginning of this week holds, well then we have seen a low of at least near-term significance, potentially even medium-term significance. And to see some consolidation in the region of the trend mean is to be expected. Generally speaking, in a bull market environment, reversions back to the mean are among the best entry opportunities. But of course, they always occur in a period of uncertainty, because prices don't pull back to the mean without somebody being uncertain about something. So now the bigger question is, as the dollar pulls back, are we going to see some pause of consolidation, or is it going to break right down, or is it in the process of breaking down right now? As we think about what's likely in terms of the stock market, well, the S&P 500 has paused in here today, and it has been modestly higher over the balance of the week and has been pushing new all-time highs, but not in an especially dynamic manner. The consolidation around the 3,500 point level was really quite orderly, and it allowed the overextension relative to the trend mean to be unwound. So there's really nothing on the chart that says that we're not going to see additional upside. But it's also worth considering that small caps are doing better. They have a much more well-defined range underneath the price, and there is certainly momentum here. If we think about ranges being explosions waiting to happen, well, this is an almost two-year range, and it is, well, in fact, it's more like almost a three-year range, and now we are just seeing the breakout. And that return to outperformance by small and mid-caps in particular is also supportive of the reflation trade. And it's not simply a US phenomenon, but it's happening everywhere. So mid-caps are definitely doing better all over the world. And that is also supportive of the reflation trade. But then, of course, we have the continued strong performance of emerging markets. And the MSCI Emerging Markets ETF is now pushing up again towards the upper side of this range that has persisted for about 12 years already. Now, it's a little overbought in the short term, but the reality is that it has been in this extremely volatile range for an awfully long time already, and all of that period of time has represented a time when the US dollar and US markets generally outperformed. So we are quite likely in a period of transition right now because of the dollar. International investors they have to be really encouraged to invest abroad when there's a strong dollar. There are plenty of opportunities for outperformance in growth and technology when you've got low interest rates and a strong dollar. But when the dollar weakens, then they are still bereft. They have then got currency risk by staying in the USA. So they go abroad and they start looking for growth elsewhere. Well, growth is not that difficult to find in the emerging markets. So the other point, of course, is that China represents an awfully big chunk of the MSCI Emerging Markets Index. And there are obvious governance issues with regard to China, and it is likely to be the subject of a great deal of conversation over the coming years about how much of a threat to global order does it represent. But India is also pushing on to new highs, and it has also pushed on to new, or at least it is holding and extending this breakout above the 12,000 level. So that is still really very positive. Then when we think about the broad pattern that we've seen in all of those mid-cap indices, we're seeing the same thing in markets like Indonesia, where it has clearly now consolidated in the region of the trend mean and then pushed straight up and through it, and it's now pushing up and into the overhead trading range. When we think about Vietnam, then it's also among the countries that is likely to do well from a global reflation, and the stock market is now pushing through that 1,000-point level. And it has been ranging below 1,000 for about 2.5 years. So it has spent enough time consolidating that extremely impressive move up from 2016 through to the beginning of 2018. And when we think about what is likely in the aftermath of the coronavirus, well, nearshoring and the migration away from manufacturing in China, both because costs are rising there, but also because of the reticence of investor or tradespeople and our traders to continue to absorb the tariffs from that have been imposed on exports to the USA from China. So with a weaker dollar and then the tariffs on top of that and then the rising cost of labor in China, there is a clear argument for why global trade should be migrating to other countries. So there will be a nearshoring argument and then also a just a simple cost argument. And oil prices are also continuing to push higher here. Parts of the Brent yield or futures curve are now in backwardation. So Brent crude has got some tailwind in terms of the short-term price appreciation potential, and it is pushing back towards the $50 area. When we think about Europe, well, the continued strength of the euro is deflationary for Europe overall. So that's likely to be a factor in terms of the export engine, but also in terms of imports. And the Euro Stoxx Index, however, is pushing on to test the 400-point level. It's been ranging below 400 for most of the last 20 years. And every time it has been able to push above it, it's failed. So we may be coming towards the end of a 20-year range. This, I think, is perhaps the clearest commonality, because I remember back in 2012 and 11, we'd seen a large number of companies that had been going sideways for a decade or longer. But what we see today are a large number of country indices that have been going sideways for decades. The Taiwanese market peaked in 1990. Well, now 30 years later, it's breaking out. When we think about the Nikkei, it's got a very similar pattern. And if we think about the topics, we need to look at really a lot of back history. There aren't many indices where we can go back and think about ranges starting in 1990 and have not yet been completed. But that is exactly what we have with the Topics Index. And the most important thing that happened was that we had this pattern where every time it got on and made a new high, it failed and made a new low. So we had this broadening triangle, which is really a very odd situation. And then subsequently, we started to see higher highs and higher lows. And the next time it made a new recovery high, well, then the logic of the preceding 26 years would have been to think that it would move on back down to a new low, and it did not do that. And now it is pushing back up again. It is looking increasingly likely that the bear market in Japan is over and that we are now likely to see a significant additional upside. The Nikkei, being a more concentrated index, has broken on the upside already and it continues. The whole move up and out of the range, and it looks like a first step above the base. This kind of trading activity is evident in Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan. There are a large number of European markets have been going sideways for 20 years. The second section index has been the clear outperformer in Japan. When we think about the outlook for the FTSE 100, well, it has also been going sideways since approximately 2000. It was on the cusp of putting in this multi-year first step above the base before the pandemic crisis, and subsequently it is now rebounding. The big uncertainty for many investors is what to expect from Brexit. The market is continuing to price in the potential that there will be a deal. And the pound is now back up to 135. Now that is as much about dollar weakness as it is about strength in the pound. But importantly, when we think about the pound versus the euro, the 110 area has continued to hold. It's still touch and go though. We haven't seen a substantial move up and away from this level, but we haven't seen a breakdown either. So this at least suggests that investors are holding their breath, but willing to give the benefit of the doubt, potentially, to a deal being struck. Any deal that is struck is unlikely to satisfy purists on either side, but unfortunately that is the nature of deal making. So when we then think about what's likely over the course of the next 3 to 4 months, we're likely to see continued efforts towards additional fiscal and monetary stimulus. There will be, and I really do continue to think that we are on the cusp of outright yield curve control, and that steepening of the yield curve is going to cause problems. The only way they're going to deal with those problems is to print in order to service the massive debt requirements. So there is likely to be a great deal of liquidity chasing assets. That's likely to stoke asset price inflation, but we're probably also going to see wage inflation, because as people come out of the pandemic, they are just not going to be happy to go back to work for the same wages. They're going to want to see more. And that is probably the greatest inflationary pressure out there. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.